Hi everyone, and welcome back to our chat about hire photography. I'm Ruri, and I'm joined by Sarah.
Hi everyone. And
in this kind of chat, we are going to be talking about the question paper. What's your thoughts on the question paper, Sarah? How long have we had it now? Was it 2019 was the first year?
Yeah, 2019.
Yeah.
My thoughts on it, I actually really like the paper. I find it really supportive for candidates.
And that's exactly it. You know, the design of the paper was so purposeful. We start with these kind of punchy short questions, to allow candidates to start to get some of that information that they've stored in their head out. The structure of question 11 deliberately becoming that bridge between multiple choice and extended response, and then question 12 being that kind of really challenging open response. So let's just give a little bit of a summary of the paper. So it is a 1 hour question paper. There are 30 marks available, which is 23% of the overall mark. So the project 77 and the question paper 23. So this question paper has two different sections. Section one is multiple choice. There are 10 questions, each worth one mark. Section two is the analysis section, 20 marks available, split into question 11 and question 12. And we'll talk a little bit more about those two questions specifically as we go through this this episode. But if we kind of focus a little bit on multiple choice just now, we've got, 2019 paper, which is no longer on the SQA website, but you may have access to it or it's saved within your centres. There's the 2021 paper. We've then got 22, 23, 24 and 25, all available on the SQA website. And there's also the specimen paper as well, which is a really good resource to refer to as well. Now, across each of those past papers, you'll start to see different multiple choice questions, but also some, like, you'll start to maybe see familiar structures throughout the paper. So you might see, for example, a multiple choice that's a table, or a multiple choice that's, I call them, spot the difference between two images.
the befores and afters.
That might be that there's a scenario, or that there's four images or diagrams. So that's a really good resource to use in the classroom to help prepare pupils for sitting the exam, because it really helps them understand the structure of what they're going to go in and sit. The language that's used throughout the paper, you know, is generally quite consistent, so that, you know, they're not going to get a massive surprise in terms of, you know, something looking wholly different.
Yeah.
But within that, you know, there is always scope for, you know, a little bit of unfamiliarity in terms of, you know, the way that questions may be phrased or presented, so that it doesn't become too predictable. And, you know, that's really important.
Even the pictures within the multiple choice, they can be vastly varied though, because, I mean, so many different things that you can take photos of, you know. So I think we've had, you know, we've had still lives, we've had cats, we've had, we've had running people. Like, there's so many genres that are showcased within the multiple choice, let alone the other two pictures.
I think it's really important that, you know, we spoke in a previous episode about trying to link the experiences that pupils have in class of taking pictures with the question paper. And one of those is that being kind of having their eyes open to different genres of photography, because it's really going to help them in terms of how they approach the question paper. You know, both multiple choice and in the kind of analysis section. I think generally we see really good efforts with multiple choice. And I think, you know, I think that works really well in terms of, you know, the structure of the questions, the content that we're looking at, the optionality of the answers. But also across those questions, you get a range of challenge. You know, you get some of the multiple choice questions that are going to be really accessible, and then other ones that might require a little bit more kind of thinking to try and engage all of those different levels of learners that are sitting the paper. I think my advice on how to teach the multiple choice is sometimes it's good to break it down by theme. So you're doing a session looking at different aperture questions, and linking it to, you know, a practical activity. But yeah, I think with multiple choice, the best piece of advice that I would give my pupils is read the question. And if they don't know the answer to one, I would always say leave it.
Yeah.
Continue to answer the rest of your multiple choice. Continue if you need to answer, you know, section two. Something might trigger for you to go back and then you know the answer.
And I love the fact that they can do that, almost thinking about it, what it is, you know, what is it not going to be?
Yeah.
What can't be the answer? Because then that maybe takes it down, so it's not suddenly a 25% chance of getting it.
Yeah, so I think multiple choice, I think, is... we're seeing really good practice nationally. You know, we're marking the questions. You know, there is, as I said, a range of challenge within the question. Yep. But, you know, practice is really strong. And I think that comes down to, you know, our confidence as teachers delivering to our students. I think it's... the fact that we've now got a series of past papers that we can use as a resource, and sharing of good practice, i.e. through SQA, but also on a kind of peer-to-peer with our colleagues as well, both within our own regions and nationally. And I think that's really driving the quality of what we see there. So if we then think about question 11, so question 11 is always broken up into smaller sections, bite-sized chunks. Now, each part of question 11 can vary in terms of how many marks it attracts, but question 11 overall will always be 10 marks. So you could, for example, have five parts to question 11 that are all worth 2 marks each, or you might have a 4-4-2, if that makes sense. But as long as the marks are between 2 and 4, totaling 10, does that make sense?
And it's always about the same image, so everything relates back to the given image that comes with question 11. And the answers always have to relate to the given image within question 11.
That's really important. You know, so let's think about question 11. What are the command words that we use in question 11? Identify
and explain.
And explain. So if we just do a little bit. Now, if anybody listening to this needs a bit more guidance on this, it's in the course spec, but it's also in my most recent course report, which you can access off the SQA website. So very simply put, if we're asking in a question, identify the specific camera control that's been used, what we're looking for really is the name of the camera control that could have been used. Okay, shutter speed,
aperture,
white balance, whatever.
White balance,
If we then, you know, the question then asks them to explain. So to explain something, it's about cause and effect.
Yeah.
So because the photographer selected a large aperture, it's meant that the background is out of focus.
Yeah,
that's an explanation, but that's a generic explanation.
Yeah.
So there's one other thing that they need to think about, which is linking it to the image. So if we just use the example, Sarah, of the specimen question paper in question 11, there's a red telephone box, there's the light trails that of the traffic that go behind it, you know, identify a camera control that created the light trails in the background. So we would say identify its shutter speed.
Yep.
And then we want to explain. So we want to say that the photographer has used a slow shutter speed to allow, and then we're linking it to the image, to allow the traffic that's passing by with the lights on to leave those motion trails in, or the light trails in the background. So yeah, within within the explanation, they've done cause and effect. So slow shutter speed has created the light trails, but they've also linked it to the image because they're talking about the traffic that's driving along the road or the traffic that's driving behind the telephone box. That bit's really important because that tells us that the candidate hasn't just learned something and then put it down on paper. We want to see as a kind of a marker, an examiner, that they've understood how it's affected the image in question. So if they talk about the specific aspects within the image, that will allow them to do so.
And I think that's the difference, a big difference between the multiple choice. In the multiple choice, they just have to know that slow shutter speed creates, captures the movement of light trails, for example.
Yeah.
But in question 11 and question 12, what you're looking for is that the candidate can spot that application, if you like, the effect within the image, so that you're able to say, not only do they know about that, that's what slow shutter speed would, one of the things that slow shutter speed would do, that they're also able to say, and I know this in this image, you know, that they're actually making that connection between cause and effect in this particular scenario.
So throughout question 11, you know, whether it's a 4-4-2 or it's a 3-3-2-2 or whatever, each part of question 11 links to the same image. Now you've got the supplement sheet, and that's on photographic quality paper. So I would always, even if I'm doing practice papers in the classroom, I always make sure that the pupils know you look at the one that's on the shiny paper. It's better quality, it's bigger, it allows them to see more detail.
So you're flipping backwards and forwards and forgetting what you were writing.
But you know, if they have that same approach throughout question 11, if it's asking me to identify and then explain, sometimes the question might dictate which camera control they're looking at, so that bit's already filled in. So you're in relation to the three camera controls and apertures picked, shutter speed is picked, and white balance is picked. They then but they still need to follow that same explanation process, cause and effect, and link it to the image. However, this point that I'm going to raise is relevant to question 11 and question 12. So if we use the example of tripod, you know, think about, and I think this is why it's really important that, you know, we give our pupils those opportunities to explore and understand, if we use the example of tripod, when you would use a tripod. So if we think about the specimen question paper, the telephone box with the motion trails in the background, absolutely the photographer would have used a tripod there because it's a slow shutter speed. We know that there would have been camera shake had he not. So then if we think about another one, so for example, the swimmers, that are the black and white image of the swimmers that are diving off into the pool, a tripod is not relevant there. So just because the candidate says the photographer could have used a tripod here, it doesn't mean to say that actually when you think about the context of that image, we're down low in the water, looking up at these swimmers, that actually a tripod is probably not going to have used. Now, there are some instances, if we take, for example, question 12, the dentist. So the lady that's sitting in the dentist waiting room, potentially a bit of ambiguity there that maybe a tripod could have been used. But it's not to avoid, necessarily to avoid motion blur, because there's no evidence to suggest that a slow shutter speed has been used. Because it's a very still image. So then in that instance, it becomes really important that the candidate explains why in that specific scenario a tripod needed to have been used. Yeah, it's really important, rather than a tripod was used to keep the camera still so that the woman's not out of focus. Well, it's very clear that she's sitting very still and not moving. So the likelihood of there being motion blur is unlikely, because it's a very still environment. So just because they've said a tripod, this is where we, as the if we're marking past papers or class tests or whatever, or it's a question that they've answered, is it relevant to the imaging question? So if we think about question 12. What's our command word, Sarah, for question 12?
So for this one, we are looking at them doing a discuss answer. Yeah. And for that, we're looking for cause and effect, which is what we've already had. But we're also asking them to talk about that justification, the impact of the cause, the effect.
This is the principal difference, isn't it, between question 11 and question 12. Yes, they might be discussing the same things, for example, camera controls, visual elements, whatever equipment. But the command word is wholly different. And because it's asking them to discuss, we need that justification. It still has to link to the image. So we've got to bring that kind of contextual part in of where they see it within the image. But the real important bit, and it's quite often missed, I will say, is the justification. So the why the photographer might have done that. What was the decision as to why they may have done that?
So like if they're talking about lighting and the fact that the photographers use natural lighting coming in the window or something like that, that's your question 11 answer. For question 12, you then want them to go on and explain like what this does. So you're actually asking them to kind of think about the why, the what did this do? What did it make me as a viewer see, think, feel, wonder? What does it help me understand? Does it maybe, using a shallow depth of field, does that maybe isolate the main subject matter? Does it draw attention to the content that is in focus, and the rest becomes hazy? When they do it very well.
Yeah. And I think I just think that what does it make you see, think, feel or wonder is a really good just thing to have in your head to make you kind of, it's that personal engagement with the image. Now, don't get me wrong, an effect of a camera control or a piece of equipment isn't always about on the viewer of the photograph.
Your technical, quite often it's about affecting the image.
Yeah.
So it is about sometimes drawing attention to, or framing. I'm thinking like framing something between something with a fast shutter speed to capture it at that point. I think there is something that they can find within it.
And I think that takes us on to kind of, the marking instructions for Higher Photography, they're there for each of the question papers, and you know, I think they're really clear in terms of how they're structured. So on the SQA website, there's past papers with the associated marking instructions, and they're really good to help support in the classroom, but also to help kind of exemplify what good looks like for candidates and pupils. Well, I think we will draw this to a close. Sarah, thank you so much for all of your input and words of wisdom. And hopefully those listening as well will be able to either take away something to help support them, or even just that reassurance that you know, you're doing good. But thank you, and thanks very much to everyone for joining in and listening to us.